And she would know? Cademan looked at me. You know who your mother was. But what about your grandmother? Your great-grandmother? Your great-grandfather? How well do you know your bloodline?
My mother was a peasant girl, I reminded him. They didn't keep records back then. Most of them couldn't even read.
Exactly so.
He sounded like he had just proved something. It pissed me off. It doesn't matter. I've told you it's a vampire skill. I get it from my father.
What is?
Luis Cesar asked.
I doubt that. Cademan
murmured.
Dory?
Something happened the other night, I told Luis Cesar. It's complicated.
Complicated? How complicated?
Merely a Manlekin army attacking the house, and then an assault by an especially strong Vargur,
Cademan said before I could stop him.
Don't worry. We don't expect you to know what that means,
he added. Because I guess Luis Cesar's face wasn't red enough already. Give me a damned blood test and end this, I said, because I needed to talk to my boyfriend, like now.
You are Domfeer, Cademan said, irrevocably changed in the womb by your father's condition from what you would have been.
There are no blood tests that can see through that. So much for talk of treaties,
Luis Cesar snapped. Claire nodded vigorously.
Fortunately, we don't need one, Cademan continued smoothly. Such tests can be inconclusive for a variety of reasons, which is why the treaty clearly states that there are other acceptable proofs, such as demonstrating clear evidence of Fey magic.
His eyes caught mine, and there was steel in them.
Which you most definitely did.
Okay, shit.
She belongs here,
Luis Cesar said, pushing against the hand I had on his chest in an attempt to get in the king's face.
She belongs with her people,
Cademan said serenely.
She belongs wherever the hell she wants to be, Claire said. And if you two start a fight in my hall, I swear.
She's right. The kids are here, I reminded them, because I had just caught sight of Aiden wobbling about on unsteady baby legs among the tall creatures on the porch, until one of them picked him up and gave him a sip of beer, which made his face wrinkle and his small fists flail around, and the Fae burst into laughter. And Miss his companion, who was still on the ground with his non-existent nose pressed against the screen door, until he was suddenly inside and launching himself at Cademan. I grabbed Stinky before actual blood was spilled, not that it helped, because Luis Cesar's hand was on his sword, Cademan's was on his, and both men looked like a battle was brewing just below the surface. And not far below, because I could feel Luis Cesar's arm flex when I grabbed it. He wanted a fight, and the king seemed more than willing to oblige. Why, I didn't know. He had to realize how this was going to play with Mircha and the rest of the Senate. It was seriously ironic that they were being put in a position to defend a dirty Domfeer, but they had done worse in their long lives. And when the choice was between distasteful and dangerous, they'd go for the former every time. And right now, an unbalanced Senate was way more of a danger than a pissed-off Fey king. Cademan had a fight on his hands. Yet despite that, and despite the fact that he had Sowinny and probably other Vargurs, since I couldn't see him risking his only one in the wilds of Earth otherwise, he was still pushing this, and still looking at Luis Cesar like he was one of the main obstacles to his carting me off to Faerie. Which might have been reasonable in the mind of someone as old and traditional as Cademan, but which made my blood boil. Time for him to enter the 21st century. He isn't my guardian,
I told Cademan flatly. I came of age a long time ago. You have anything to say, you say it to me.
I just did,
the king pointed out, but he was still looking at Louis César. Until I twisted a hand in his shirt, almost tight enough to strangle him. The stunning green eyes shifted to me, and a beautiful smile broke over the face, almost luminous in its intensity.
And would have when I first returned, but didn't wish to interrupt your talk with young Imsy. How is he?
Fine, I said shortly. He thinks it was a woman, a light fey woman, who attacked him.
I knew it!
Claire looked daggers at her father-in-law.
I told you!
Yes, yes.
Cademan frowned slightly. Because while enraged master vampires didn't seem to faze him, his red-haired daughter-in-law was another matter. And if Claire had been pissed before, it was nothing compared to this. Suspicion was one thing, confirmation was quite another. And while this wasn't actual proof of Afridus's involvement, I didn't expect Claire to understand that. Apparently Cademan didn't either. At least not without some work.
We need to discuss it at a later time.
We'll discuss it now, Claire snapped, as I released him,
because the man had bigger problems.
I know what you want, but as I've told you repeatedly, it's not that simple.
Did you even see her?
Yes, I...
See her? I asked. Cademan glanced at me.
My sister is currently a guest of your consul.
Great.
And she denies any involvement.
Of course she denies it, Claire said. Did you expect her to just admit it?
Possibly, yes.
Cademan began to look impatient as Claire glared at him.
You lived at court long enough to know better than this. My sister is not only Blarestri royalty. She is the queen of another powerful court.
Who she betrayed?
But that does not mean her husband would not come to her aid if she were imperiled. Her honor reflects on him. He might arrange an accident, were he ever to gain control of her again. But to allow another to—
You mean you won't pursue it?
Claire's eyes flashed.
That she can just do whatever she wants?
I didn't say that.
Cademan's expression remained mild, but his voice was a little sharper than before.
I understand that you want to protect Aiden. So do I. But these things have to be handled carefully, or a war—
We're already at war. Or haven't you noticed?
I have not.
It was curt.
Neither have you. Believe me, if it comes to that, you will see the difference.
Claire just stood there for a moment, vibrating. And there were no remnants of the Vogue cover girl now. I could see it clearer than I ever had. The wild fey princess, all fiery hair and electric green eyes and pale, unearthly beauty, a legend straight out of an old Irish song suddenly come to life. And furious.
Then tell her this next time you meet,
Claire spat.
If she comes for my child, she won't be dealing with a fey army or a vampire court or your political games. She'll be dealing with me. And I will kill her.
Chapter 32. Claire banged out of the screen door, leaving the three of us, or the four if you counted Stinky, and I didn't see any reason why you shouldn't, since he was kicking up the biggest fuss, which was a problem, because I was going to have a tough time of it if I had to get between the two men again. But Cademan surprised me.
I need to talk to Claire,
he told me quickly.
In the meantime, think on this. You've been an outsider all your life, part of two worlds, but accepted by neither. She's accepted, Luis Cesar snapped. She's on the Senate.
Cademan shot him a look.
And we both know how long that will last once things calm down, don't we? Her family is here.
And maybe there as well. Emerald Eyes found mine.
I could help you look for them.
Cademan, think on it, he told me, kissed my hand and left, leaving me with a hissing, furious baby and Luis Cesar, who didn't look any happier. I felt the same, although for different reasons.
Just do it, I told myself. Right now, before you chicken out. You have the perfect excuse.
Cademan just handed it to you. But instead, I stood there, feeling miserable and not saying anything. Neither did Luis Cesar for a long moment. I didn't know what he was thinking, but I was trying to come up with another solution. Something, anything that would let me hold on to him, because he was wrong. I didn't care about being on the Senate, a community that had shunned me for years. That was Mircha's idea. I'd gone along with it to help him out, not because I wanted prestige I wasn't going to get anyway. I only wanted one thing. But as always, it was something I couldn't have. And the longer I put this off, the more I tried to find a solution that didn't exist, the more I put him in danger. Dorina was a knife in the dark, a gun in the hand, a brilliant, multifaceted weapon of destruction. I'd lived with her for centuries. I knew what she was. I knew what she could do. Even worse, I knew him. What happened if she decided to banish me? What happened when he realized that I wasn't coming back? That my consciousness had been scattered, and all that was left was a shell, one still walking around because someone else was in there. Dorina wouldn't have to provoke an attack. He would do that for her. And then he would die. It wasn't even a question. When Luis Cesar felt something, it was all over his face. When he did something, it was wholehearted, full speed ahead, no stopping to think about his own safety, because why would he? He thought himself invincible. It was why he was pulling me against him now, letting me close, not caring that I had a struggling baby Fay in my arms who was considerably less than tame. It was why he was letting me there, right there at his neck, one of a vampire's most vulnerable spots, just as he had in the shower, taking no precautions despite knowing what I was, what I could do, what she could do, and what she would do, sooner or later, if I didn't woman the hell up. I think we need a break, I said hoarsely, and immediately knew he didn't get it. The body didn't tense. The hand on my back continued stroking. The lips kissed my hair.
It's been quite a week, he agreed, to a point I hadn't been making. The Senate has called another meeting for tomorrow, which is unavoidable. But after that, we should be able to get away for a few.
No. I pulled back, but forced myself to look at him, because I owed him that much. No, I mean we need a break. You and me.
What?
For some reason, he still looked confused. Damn it! Why couldn't he understand and let this be over? I wanted to rip the Band-Aid off, not stretch it into agony. My life's a mess right now, I said flatly. I need some time to figure things out. Some time to myself, I added, because he still didn't get it. And then, suddenly, he did.
What?
He said it again, although I knew he understood. His eyes, God, just make it stop. You heard me. I need some space.
Some space? What does that mean?
You know what it means.
No.
It was rough.
I do not. If you wish to be with this Fae, then say so. This isn't about him.
Then what is it about? Just a few days ago, you almost...
He broke off for a moment, and his jaw clenched. But then he came out with it because Luis Cesar isn't like Mircha or any other vamp I've ever known. He just lays it all out there.
You almost mocked me. And now you do not wish to see me anymore, comme ça? What am I supposed to think?
I didn't mark you. I just got carried away.
I stopped because that was a lie, and not even a very good one.
But he had flustered me. This whole thing was throwing me in ways I hadn't expected. I didn't know how to break up with someone. I'd never had to do it before. The few long-term lovers I'd had in the past, if you could call a few weeks long-term, had hightailed it for the horizon as soon as Dorina reared her head the first time. They'd left me, not vice versa, and I'd always assumed I got the short end of the stick. I'd been wrong. Leaving was much harder, especially with someone who mirrored every emotion, every thought on his face. Like now, when he had just paled, enough that it was visible even in the darkness of the hall. And his eyes. I didn't want to look at them anymore. I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want any of this, but a small hurt now was better than what lay ahead. But God, I wanted to tell him the truth. That was the worst part of it. He'd never know how much I did want him. How much I'd always... Fuck! What was the point? Just finish this! But he beat me to it.
Ah, of course. I should have realized.
Realized? But I didn't get an answer to anything. His throat was working, but he didn't say anything else.
And then the door slammed open behind us, and Sawinny came through, grinning hugely and holding two full beer steins.
Dory, I just heard.
He bent and kissed me lightly on each cheek. Like that was a perfectly normal thing for a member of the standoffish Fae to do.
It's so wonderful. And not just because there will be someone to take the pressure off me. I mean, it's not so bad. People just have all these expectations. But you already know what you're doing, so you won't have to worry about that. And now we have a new sister. It's been so long since we've found anyone among your people.
So Winnie kept talking and tugging, trying to shepherd us back to the festivities. Probably because I was the guest of honor. It didn't work. I couldn't hear him anymore, just the rise and fall of his voice, with no words making sense. And I couldn't move, even though the hall seemed to be doing that on its own, telescoping in on me.
Because Luis Cesar's face...
It had changed from anger to something else, something familiar, because we had a similar history in at least one way. The prince and the pauper had a lifetime of being abandoned by everyone we cared about. For Luis Cesar, it had started with his mother, who had given up the tiny boy who loved her in order to keep her reputation intact, and her betrayal had been followed by a host of others, from his treacherous half-brothers to that of my Uncle Radu, the one who had made him a vampire, and who had then abandoned him to find his own way in a hostile world. Radu had had good reason, one that had been explained to me a couple times now, but that I still didn't completely get. But it didn't matter, because it hadn't softened the blow. And for someone who had lost her own mother early, who had spent years thinking that her father had abandoned and rejected her, who'd had to leave every lover or friend she had ever had. Yeah, I knew that look, that pain. I saw it on his face, in his eyes, and I suddenly couldn't do it to him. Not again.
Fine. So let him stick around until Dorina guts him, a little voice said. See how you feel then.
I shoved the mental voice away,
It wasn't the right time. Not now. Not like this. With other people around to overhear, and when there was no way to give him a proper explanation.
And you think he'll accept it if you do?
You already tried that in the shower. He won't leave unless you make him go. But as it turned out, I didn't have to do anything. Luis Cesar suddenly took my hand, bowed over it, and left. Turning around and striding so quickly down the hall and out of the house that he was gone almost before I realized what was happening.
"He isn't staying for the party?"
So Winnie asked, blinking after him. I just stood there, not sure I could say anything.
"But we're having roast pork."
"I have to go to the bathroom," I said roughly, shoved Stinky at him and ran up the stairs. I made it back to my room feeling like I'd been stabbed straight through something vital, and now it was just a case of bleeding out. His face. God, his face. I shut my door behind me and then just stood there, in the dark, empty room. Only it wasn't. There was the wall Claire had once thrown him through, misunderstanding some sounds, thinking he was hurting me when he never would. There was the bathroom where he'd first told me he loved me, shocking me to all but speechlessness. There was the bed. I felt sick, like actually physically ill. There were no chairs, Olga having taken hers down again, so I settled for leaning against the wall, and realized that I was still holding his rose. Somehow I hadn't dropped it with all the others. It was a little worse for wear. A couple of the outer petals were missing, and one of the leaves was hanging by a thin bit of stem, the rest having been ripped from the stalk. I stared at it, feeling as empty as the room. Fuck. I bent over, hands on my knees, and just breathed for a minute. "It's okay," the stupid voice said. "You'll feel better in time. You always knew this wasn't going to work." I beat my fists into my temples until the voice stopped. Until I was dizzy and probably completely demented-looking, but I didn't care. There was no one to see. There never would be. My head felt dizzy. My gut was roiling, and my legs were weak. I slowly slid down the wall until I ended up clutching my knees and the rose, and then just sat there in darkness. I didn't cry. I wasn't going to fucking cry. This was my fault, all of it. So I didn't get that release. I didn't get anything, because I knew better, knew these things never worked out, and that was with normal guys. What the hell had I been thinking? Me and Luis Cesar? What a laugh. But for a little while, it hadn't been funny. For a little while, it had been like nothing I'd ever known. I had lived 500 years, more or less, the less being the swaths of time I didn't remember when Dorina had been in charge. But even if you crossed those out, I'd been around a long time. I'd seen amazing things, some frightening, some wonderful, some terrible. I'd never seen anything like him. For a moment, I let myself remember. Sunlight turning brown hair to red. Electric blue eyes, the most vivid I had ever seen. A rare laugh breaking through the facade of sang-froid he determinedly kept up, even though he was really bad at it. Him accepting an 18th-century-looking satin ensemble from Radu, even though it was lavender, and probably intending to wear it sometime because it would make his father happy, and he didn't care what people thought of him. Most people. I thought about him looking so pleased with himself as he smugly said, 3, after exceeding the number of bears I'd wanted, despite the odds, and I felt my legs tense, because I wanted to run after him so badly I was vibrating.
I'd never had anyone like him, and for a moment, I let myself grieve. I didn't deserve him, but I'd had him anyway, something that had frequently made me thrilled and terrified and grateful and suspicious and amazed, just jaw-droppingly amazed, all at the same time. And I'd thrown him away, without even a decent explanation, because there was no explanation he'd understand. I didn't even know if I understood. So I sat there, dry-eyed, and staring at nothing, until somebody rapped on the wood behind me.
"Dory?"
I stood up and cracked the door. Claire's worried face looked in.
"Is something..."
She broke off, and before I could say anything, if there'd been anything to say, she was pulling me into her arms. I sent him away. I sounded blank. Claire hugged me harder and didn't say anything. I loved him, and I sent him away. It was my voice, but there was a note I'd never heard in it. Not grief, not anger. More like wonder. Like even my brain thought I was crazy.
"This is about Dorina,"
Claire said after a moment. It wasn't a question, but I pulled back and nodded. She didn't say anything, but I knew her expressions. I knew she wanted to. I laughed suddenly. It sounded harsh.
"I thought you'd be pleased."
She didn't look pleased. She looked stricken.
"No. Oh, no. Dory, I'm so sorry."
"For what?" She wrapped her arms around herself, like she still needed someone to hold on to.
He was nice when you were ill. I expected him to be angry."
She laughed a little, not happily.
"I have terrible timing. I realized I must have interrupted something the other day, when you were in the bath."
"How?" She shook her head.
"He came to the door in a towel, with soap in his hair. He was blushing."
"He does that a lot. Redhead complexion, and his kind doesn't exactly tan."
"I didn't think they could do that," she said. "Vampires, I mean."
"Louis Cesar isn't a normal vampire." I wanted her to go. It felt like somebody had yanked my heart out of my chest and crumpled it into a little ball. I wanted nothing more than to curl around the pain and... But Claire almost looked like she was in pain, too.
"You told me not to lump them all together," she said. "I didn't listen."
"It's all right."
"It's not all right."
"It doesn't matter. Especially now."
"It matters."
She stared at me.
"He was so worried, Dory, when they brought you back from those fights. I told him I thought you were okay, but that someone really should check you out, just to be sure. But he said he didn't know anyone else here."
"That's great, Claire."
"No, listen. I asked him why he didn't contact one of his people. You know, mentally."
I nodded.
"And have them find a healer. But he said that takes concentration, and he couldn't manage it right then. So I dug out the emergency number for the all-night service and gave it to him. But he couldn't dial it. His hands were shaking too much."
I'd started digging through the dresser, looking for something to wear to Horatiu's, but now I rounded on her.
"Why are you doing this?"
She bit her lip.
"I don't know. I realized then that I'd made a mistake. He does love you. And you love him."
"None of which matters." She caught my arm.
"Love always matters. And when I saw him that way, this big, strong master vampire, suddenly so terrified, so helpless, I knew I'd been wrong. Wrong about him, maybe wrong about all of them. I don't know."
"They're like every group,"
some good, some bad. I looked from her to the hand she had on my arm.
Why are you doing this?
I repeated.
Because he's a big, strong master vampire. He can handle this. He can handle her. But I can't.
I grabbed my duffel and threw some stuff inside, barely even looking at it.
If I hurt him... Dory...
Claire's voice was suddenly small.
If what I saw that night was any indication, you couldn't hurt him more than this.
She gestured around. At what, I didn't know. Probably my empty fucking room.
Then I'll hurt him. At least he'll be alive to feel it.
I left. Chapter 33. I drove around aimlessly for a while, with the top down because it was stifling and my air conditioner had been busted for a week. It didn't help. The night was muggy. I was sweating and miserable, and nobody even bothered to try to hijack me so I could take out some aggression. Not that I seem to have much right now, or anything else. It was why I hadn't headed to Horatiu's like I'd planned. I was in no condition to talk to him. I just wanted to get away, somewhere without people, even well-meaning ones, somewhere I could think. But now that I had, my brain didn't seem interested. I felt strange, detached, numb, and seriously in need of a drink. I also needed information, and there was only one place to get both. I jerked the wheel around and headed for the bar I knew best.
Shut the door!
The collective shout made me jump, as it always did, despite the fact that I knew to expect it. I slipped inside and shut the door. Some of Finn's clientele tended to be light-phobic, and the shout had become a habit, even at night. Others just liked the ambiance of a basement bar lit only by a dozen TVs, a few dim lanterns, and scrolls of golden graffiti streaming down the walls, giving the odds on anything and everything. The proprietor wasn't picky. If you could bet on it, you could get odds at Finn's. Assuming you didn't break your neck on the way down the stairs, that is. It was actually worse than descending into the twins' den, where all you had to deal with was black. In here, it was either glaring, rapidly shifting colors, or darkness. Take your pick. Which left you tripping over your own feet the whole night because your eyes never totally adjusted. Or your ears, I thought, as another roar went up from the crowd. The really big crowd. I hadn't seen Finn's this packed in a while. I couldn't even see any floor below, just a sea of heads, lit by flickering darkness. And it was the same up here. I pushed my way down the stairs ruthlessly, because people weren't using them for the purpose intended, but as a way to get a better look at the big screen off to one side. Not that it was helping. It covered maybe a fourth of one wall, and was where the most important events were shown. But I couldn't tell what was on tonight thanks to the mass of people standing in front of it. The bar was swamped, too, when I finally fought my way over, although I kept shoving until I found a piece to prop my elbow on. Finn was nowhere in sight. The long slab of maple was being manned by a bunch of his family, at a guess, since they were forest trolls, too. The nearest was so tiny that even though he was standing on a box, his nose kept hitting the bar top and then bouncing up and down. It was kind of fascinating to watch, and didn't seem to bother him, although it did make his voice a little hard to understand. Although that would have been the case anyway, I thought, wincing as another huge roar shook the place. What the hell was going on? After a moment, the bartender finished with his current job and popped up at my end, bobbing his nose expectantly. "Finn!" I yelled, because anything else wasn't going to be heard over the noise. He cupped a hand around his ear and leaned closer, in the universal, "Speak up!" pose.
Finn, is he in tonight?
What?
Is Finn here?
I all but bellowed.
You want a beer?
No, I want Finn.
Okay, what kind of gin?
No, Finn. I just want to find out.
Stout?
I gave up.
Never mind.
He nodded and hopped off his box, disappearing under the counter, and I scanned the room. If Finn wasn't behind the bar, he was usually taking bets over by the big screen, where everything was happening. But I couldn't see him. I couldn't see anything with the old green couches completely covered in people, and more standing behind, and with the screen itself giving off only an occasional flicker through the yelling, jumping, and high-fiving patrons in front of it. Somebody was having fun tonight.
Here you go.
The bartender was back. He handed me something reddish-gold with a good head.
What is it?
What you ordered. Barley wine.
I sighed and paid up, because arguing wasn't worth the hassle, and took my barley wine on a tour of the facilities. It wasn't easy. I got more alcohol on me than in me, thanks to buffeting elbows, and was all but deaf due to the constant thunder of the crowd. But I made it to one side of the big screen, where I was pushed against a side table by the crowd's ebb and flow. That wasn't such a bad thing, since the table was currently empty, except for a bunch of used glasses. So I climbed on top to look for Finn, and found somebody else instead. Make that two somebodies, I thought, as another earth-shaking roar went up from the crowd. The screen was so big, almost filling my vision from here, and the crowd was so close and so loud that it was genuinely disorienting. It felt like I had stepped into some weird virtual reality game, which we were all along for the ride. And what a ride it was! I had to steady myself on the shoulders of a couple guys to keep from falling off the table as we went tearing along behind a huge troll, who in turn was tearing through a building, a bunch of screaming men running ahead of him, most of them too panicked to use the guns they were carrying, and the few who did finding it hard to aim while pissing themselves. The troll smashed into something that shattered in a haze of flying wood, and whatever was providing the feed took a beating. We all lolled drunkenly, maybe half the bar together, as it flipped end over end and hit the floor. And then we were leaning the other way as it bounced up again and zoomed around in a circle to right itself, and showed us a dizzying view of an industrial building in the process. It was old and grimy, with a row of high rectangular windows letting in streams of hazy moonlight, or maybe streetlight. It filtered down to illuminate the scene, looking strangely peaceful and serene. While below, the troll was literally ripping apart the building that the men were running through and then using the pieces to rip them apart. I saw one guy bisected by a flying piece of metal, maybe a large table or door. We were back behind the troll now and moving so fast that it was hard to tell. Another was crushed under a brick wall that decided to collapse when a massive arm was dragged through it. And a third was sent hurtling into another wall, courtesy of the girder that had been thrown at him like the world's biggest javelin. Others, however, were obviously mages, because I saw shrapnel bouncing off what had to be shields. Shields that were taking a beating, and not just from the troll. Because on his back, hunched over like a tiny wild-eyed wart, was something crazy. Or make that someone crazy. A screaming banshee with a machine gun and an afro just letting it rip. I had a sudden dizzying flashback to the same woman in the cab of a truck, swaying back and forth and cackling maniacally. Kind of like she was doing now, only the machine gun bursts drowned it out, along with the screams of the remaining men, one of whom finally got his shit together long enough to lob a spell. The big troll ducked, and it mostly flew overhead. His, anyway. The maniacal wart, however, got her hair singed, which started smoking. But not because it was on fire, but because the spell had lit the dozen cigarettes she had stored up there like a tobacco crown. She took a couple out of the smoking circlet, stuck them between her teeth, and let loose like the last 5 minutes of the A-team. I just stared. So did the mages, for a moment, until their shields went down, and so did they. Well, most of them. I saw a few make it through some industrial sliding doors up ahead, using magic to increase their speed, while ours started to flag. I wasn't sure whether the troll was getting tired, because he ought to be tired after acting like a wrecking crew all on his own, or if maybe there was another reason. And then I saw the reason. Cage after old iron cage lined the walls and spilled out into one end of the huge space. Some housed lumps huddled in darkness, too dirty and ragged to make an easy identification. But others had humans clinging to the bars, staring out in dawning hope, hands reaching, reaching, reaching. For the keys that the troll shook off one of the few men who were still moving before throwing him through a window, and then standing in the middle of the room and roaring, the sound almost drowned out by the cries of the slaves and the yells, cheers, and boos of the crowd around me, who were surging to their feet, those who hadn't already been there, and acting like they'd just won the Super Bowl. Maybe because some of them had, I realized, finally spotting Finn on the other side of the screen, doing some swift calculations on an old yellow pad. A list of odds and their payouts showed up on the wall a moment later, while the winners surged at Finn and the losers headed for the bar. I just stood there, staring at the images, because the important part of the night's events, which no one seemed to care about, was still ongoing. The slaves were being freed. The small woman with the smoking hair jumped down from the troll's back, assisted by a hand the size of an easy chair, and grabbed the keys, and went hopping from cage to cage, letting out what I could now see were mostly weirs. Some were in human form, thin, dirty people with matted hair and darting eyes. But others were too exhausted and sick to transform, leaving them stuck as a menagerie of animals. A lion with half its fur gone. A dozen wolves, so scrawny I could see all their ribs. A huge gorilla that was cradling a tiny baby with the greatest of tenderness. And a mass of selkies, fey skin changers who in their animal form resemble seals. Somebody went to switch the channel, and I growled at him. The man slowly pulled his hand away, and I hopped down and pushed through the remaining crowd to get closer to the screen. The slaves were running now, some stopping to help those who couldn't help themselves, but most darting into the night, not even waiting to plunder their former jailers whose bodies were littered everywhere. Except on the long dock visible outside the sliding metal door, where a couple guys in a speedboat were about to take off. At least, they were before a young man with massive eagle-like wings swooped down, the partial transformation allowing him to kick the duo back onto the dock, where they were swarmed by their former captives. But many more slaves ran off, not enticed by revenge any more than they had been by plunder. They looked terrified. But not of the troll, who was slumped down now on the dirty wood floor, head lolling, obviously exhausted, and letting his assistant do the mopping up.
Dory!
My head jerked up to see Finn waving at me above the crowd. He jumped off his stool and came bustling over, looking pleased.
You out and about already?
I blinked at him, wondering how he knew I'd been at the theater, and then I realized he thought I was still recovering from the burnt-out building fight. Yeah. I went back to staring at the screen, where the eagle man had now transformed his feet into great claws to rake at the slavers, one of whom had grabbed a kid as a shield, and who a second later was hitting the dock on his knees, when the weir child changed into a python and wrapped around his neck.
"I should have expected it," Finn said. "You always heal fast."
"Finn," I gestured at the screen, half incoherent. "What is that?" He looked over his shoulder and then back at me, beaming.
"The latest thing. I'm making a killing."
"On what?"
"On the crazy crusade those two have got going."
He jerked a thumb at the screen.
"You haven't heard?"
I shook my head. He pushed his way through the crowd and pulled a folded newspaper from in between two sofa cushions.
"Here. It's yesterday's, but you get the idea."
It would be hard to miss. At the top of the paper was a screaming headline, "Underworld Gang War," and beneath it, "What is the Circle hiding?" Not a lot, judging by the pictures, which showed members of the Silver Circle in their trademark leather overcoats, a few with glittering insignia, standing around the middle of what appeared to be another warehouse. It was a newer one this time, all dirty concrete floors and few windows to let in light, on what, at a guess, was another troll attack. It looked like the one I had just witnessed, except with more bodies. A lot more. I couldn't tell exactly how many because a mage had his hand up, palm facing the camera and fingers spread, in a vain attempt to keep any images from reaching the masses. But if that was the goal, the Circle's guys should have thought to check the security feed. Below the candid shot was a whole row of grainy stills from a video of the attack. And while they were hard to make out, thanks to poor lighting and cheap equipment, they were recognizably the dynamic duo. Only this time, Revenge Granny had gone full Scarface, with a machine gun in one hand and a sawed-off shotgun in the other.
"They're really something, huh?"
Finn said, looking over my shoulder. Yeah, I just wasn't sure what that something was. But I knew what it'd be if the Circle caught up with them. Vigilante justice wasn't a concept they understood. "How did you get this?" I gestured at the screen.
"Easy."
He looked proud of himself.
"I saw the paper and recognized Big Blue from the fights. You remember him. He threw you at a wall."
I didn't say anything.
"Anyway, I saw the story and thought, huh, he's looking for some payback. And I didn't think he was going to stop at one slaver. I mean, look at the scars on that guy. Some people are owed."
"So you did what exactly?"
"Called in some favors. Heard some rumors about which smugglers still got game, what with the Senate trying to shut them down and all. And the Circle's just as bad. These guys been operating for years, and nobody cares, but all of a sudden..."
"Finn?"
"Yeah. So, anyway, I set up a camera or two. You know, the kind they use at sporting events, 'cause they can fly around after the action. Cost me something, 'cause I had to bribe some of their boys to do it, since my guys... well, they're good, but good don't mean suicidal."
"Wait. You bribed some of the slavers to give you a feed of their activities?" I stared at him.
"Not of their activities. Just of a room. One near where the merchandise was being kept. 'Cause that's what these two are after. The cameras only activate if there's some major event for them to follow. Like Big Blue there tear-assing through the place."
"Why on earth would they do that? Why would anyone?" Finn frowned at my obvious disbelief.
"The head honchos wouldn't. But the low men on the totem pole? They don't make the big bucks, and figure what the boss don't know won't hurt him. Come on, Dory. You know how it goes. How many guys you bribed through the years?"
"Not that many. I usually didn't have the scratch." And not slavers.
Well, it works the same way. And these guys, they never think they're gonna get hit. It's obviously gonna be the other guy.
He rolled his eyes.
So why not set up a camera in a closet or something and pocket some paper? Anyway, these two Rambos, they're folk heroes. 2 days, and they're folk heroes.
And you're taking bets on what?
Everything. Who are they gonna hit next? How long does it take for them to clean house? How many headshots does Granny get?
I get the idea.
It's a windfall. I haven't made this much since the ley line races, and the odds kill you on those.
Do you know where I can find him? I nodded at the screen. Maybe I didn't need Curly after all.
Sure I do. Right?
Finn stopped abruptly, looking behind him. Because he had just noticed the same thing I had, the fight wasn't over. I heard several nearby patrons shout a warning, but, of course, no one who needed it could hear, and Blue was either too tired or too distracted by the handful of slaves coming up to thank him to notice the men headed his way. One of the survivors must have called for backup, and it was coming in spades. I saw a group of men running down the now deserted dock, saw them flood through the open doors, saw them lob a collective spell that sent shockwaves through the air, and then I didn't see anything. The feed had gone dead. Chapter 34 15 minutes later, Finn and I swerved onto a street and then screeched to a halt, because the warehouse wasn't dark anymore. Somebody had beaten us to the punch, and their guys were crawling all over the place, including one who magically appeared beside my car before I could slam us into reverse.
"Hello, Dory."
I put the car in park and sat back against the seat. "Hi, James." I still had the top down on my old jalopy, so of course he had recognized me. James was one of the guys whose retirement account I contributed to from time to time, because he made really good protection wards. Not having the ability to make any magic for myself, I had to buy it, and if you're gonna buy, it may as well be from the best. Of course, dealing with a member of the Silver Circle has its downsides, too. James leaned on the driver's side door and flashed some 2 white teeth at me. Or maybe they just looked extra white next to his nice chocolate mocha skin. And his suspicious brown eyes.
"Out for a ride?"
I smiled back. "Okay." He shook his head. He had a man bun of braids that nobody ever said anything about, like they didn't question the full beard he wore, which I got the impression wasn't regulation. Because when you're as powerful as he is, people bend the rules for you. But not for me, it seemed.
"Not tonight,"
he confirmed. "Why not tonight?"
"I think you know."
He gestured back at the old building.
"We got a problem."
"That's too bad." He just looked at me. I sighed. "Word is some slavers got dead. I'd think that was the opposite of a problem."
"It's a problem when we don't know who's behind it, or where they're going to strike next. This time it was slavers. Next time,
it'll be more slavers if it's anyone at all." I thought of the strength of the spell that had hit Big Blue. And it may not be anyone. The friendly guy I knew suddenly wasn't.
"All right. I'm gonna need you to come in."
"Why? I don't know any more than you do."
"Well, it sounds like you do."
"I only know what I saw." I looked at Finn, who looked back, the tiny troll eyes disappearing into flaps of skin, his version of narrowing his eyes. Nobody likes talking to cops. But after a minute, he coughed up an explanation. It didn't seem to help. James glared at him.
"You set up a feed of a highly illegal enterprise?"
"I didn't know it was illegal. There were just these rumors."
"So you could take bets on the outcome?"
Finn bristled.
"There's nothing wrong with that. I run a quality establishment.
I pay my taxes, city, state, and federal, and then you guys on top. But the world's gonna end if I ever try to make a buck.
Two more of the Circle's guys were suddenly there, or more likely had already been there, but had decided to drop the kind of charms they use for camouflage, and promptly demonstrated why they're not called police, or peacekeepers, or even law enforcement.
Oh, no.
They're called war mages, and these two look like that should have been war tanks, because the stupid trench coats they wear to cover up all the weapons they cart around were so distended that they made them look positively fat. Like Father Christmas in leather. Leather and scowls.
Wonder what they'd leave in a stocking, I thought, as one of them grabbed me.
And then lost me when I broke his hold and flipped over his head, landing on the street behind them.
Oh, crap,
Finn said, and disappeared into the well of darkness in the floorboards. Meanwhile, I was suddenly facing two levitating guns, which was bullshit. Mages only do that when they need backup and have run out of hands, and there was nothing in their hands now. They just wanted to be dicks. Okay, I can be a dick too. A moment later, the guns were still levitating, but in pieces, and the barrels were mangled out of all use. Because mages never learn. Levitating weapons are cool and all, but they still move at human speeds. I don't.
Cut it! James barked at his men before they could retaliate, and then shot me a warning look, too. Don't escalate.
I'm not the one who drew weapons.
You put your hands on an officer. You know better than that.
And you know better than to manhandle a senator, but I didn't see that stopping you. It felt weird on my tongue, that word, like the fake title it wasn't. Like something unearned, when it hadn't been that either. The coveted seats were always won through a combination of strength and politics, meaning that I had just as much right to one as anyone else, and might as well get some good out of it for as long as it lasted. But it still felt strange, confusing, and I guess James agreed, because he frowned and looked around like he expected a senator to suddenly pop out of the bushes. His buddies, who had finally realized they were down two guns, didn't bother trying to figure it out. Magical talent is a requirement for joining the War Mage Corps, but intelligence isn't, as they demonstrated by going for me again, and getting their heads slammed down to the side of my car, which did not seem to improve their moods.
"Unhand us," one seethed at me while thrashing around, "or we'll unhand you."
Meaning,
"Snap our shields shut on your wrists and take your hands off in the process."
You could do that, I agreed, and then I'd get the answer to something I've always wondered about.
Like what?
The other mage demanded as a distraction for his foot trying to do a sweep on mine. I stepped on it, hard. Whether a Domphir's limbs are like a vamp's, I told him while he cursed, and keep moving after being cut off. If they don't, you win. If they do,
you'll still be handless.
And your skulls will still be popped like melons, so I doubt you'd care. Although it does raise the question, can disembodied hands be put on trial? I don't think it's ever come up. Mage number one glared at me.
You expect us to believe you don't know what happens when you lose a limb?
I grinned, showing off baby fangs. Never been slow enough to find out. And then a heavy hand fell on the back of my neck, leaving us all standing there in the same pose like a bunch of idiots.
"Now, here we are," James said cheerfully. "One big happy family."
Mage number two cursed.
"Not with that thing." "Shut it, Tompkins. You're in enough trouble."
James smiled at me gently.
"And so are you."
"Check it," I said.
"Check what?"
"My position. With the Senate. Or do you want to have to explain why you have a senator locked up?"
"A senator?"
"Yes."
"You?"
"Yes."
"Since when?" "Since a couple weeks ago,"
Finn said, popping back up.
"I know, I didn't believe it either."
James just looked at me.
"You're a Domphir."
I looked back. I wasn't in the mood for this tonight. I really wasn't. "Just check it." He checked it. And then he checked it again, having whoever was on the other end of the phone make some more calls. And then he just stood there, phone in hand, while his boys